Good morning, everyone. Welcome to the Subcommittee on Transportation and Economic Development. It is Monday, May the 19th, 2003. At this time, I'm going to open up an informational meeting, and we will be talking about the possibility of a work session on Senate Bill 5539. And Cindy, I'll ask you to just kind of give the two of us an overview of where we are.
Senator George, members of the committee, good morning. My name is Cindy Jones. And where we can start today is what I had planned to start is to go over my memo for the work session and start out with the technical adjustments that have been made to the budget at this point.
Okay.
I'm going to go ahead and start with that.
We're going to do that as an informational meeting. Yep.
Okay, starting from the beginning, technical adjustments reduced the total budget by $884,457. And as we go down, you can see starting with utility regulation, which is the first program, the adjustments are for inflation at $27,597, and those are other funds. Merit increases were $46,185. Attorney General's assessment was at $70,854 for a total of $144,636. Federal funds under the utility regulation program, for inflation it was $2,535. Merit increases, there was an increase in this one for $11,601, and that was due to the PICS closure of April of the prior year, 2002. And there were, at that time, there was a vacant position, but they have since hired, and they hired at a higher step due to the related work with that position. It's a little bit more complicated than a regular position, so they hired at a higher step. So that brought the total to a $9,066 increase for federal funds in that program. The Residential Service Protection Program, other funds, inflation was $316,327. Merit increases at $29,376. The Attorney General's assessment was at $964 for a total of $346,667. Under the Policy and Administration Program, other funds were $79,127 for inflation, merit increases at $185,208, Attorney General assessment was $95,344, and the DAS assessment, which wrapped up the entire PUC, went under the Program for Policy and Administration at $42,541 for a total of $402,220. So the total technical adjustments for PUC were at $884,457. Were there any questions?
Any questions at this point?
Okay.
Mr. Chairman,
Senator Morris.
It's been a long time since we were in this. Weeks and weeks ago. Could you refresh your memory on these residential service adjustments and the policy administration adjustments?
The adjustments that I did?
Yeah, the background for those. Reductions, the background.
Oh, okay, I'm sorry.
What drives those reductions?
Senator George and Senator Morris, these were the reductions that we took. We're taking them for all agencies across the board. Inflation, we're taking that decrease out. We're taking it out for merit increases. For the Attorney General inflation, it's the assessment inflation, and also for DAS assessment. Each agency that goes through the process are having those numbers taken out.
Excuse me, more specifically to my question, the residential service protection of inflation of $316,000, maybe elaborate more on that.
Okay, what that is for, Senator Morris, is for the inflation, the technical adjustment eliminates 3.5% general inflation, and down below I've marked each one of the services that are taken out for. In-state travel, out-of-state travel, employee training, office expenses, data processing, publicity and publications, professional services, dues and subscriptions, facilities maintenance, agency program-related service and supplies, other services and supplies, and expendable property. We just backed out inflation for each of those.
I guess this is fine. I look at the 9901 of roughly 40 million jumping to 275 million and then dropping back to 156 million. It makes you wonder what the department's doing.
Senator Dorsch, Senator Morse, the increase in funds, if you see at the very top the non-limited other funds, that's for the Oregon Universal program, the service program. It was if you look at the, they didn't have that 1999-01 because it began, I believe, in 1999. And so the adopted was the $243,100 for the non-limited. Legislatively approved was $243,100,000. But they overestimated for that legislatively approved amount, and in actuality it dropped down then for the 03-05 governor's recommended. So it's half of what they thought it was going to be. And that is just a pass-through account. Those aren't the agency's funds at all.
Okay. At this time, having a quorum present, I'm going to close the informational meeting and open this work session on Senate Bill 5539, Public Utility Commission.
So, Mr. Miller, once you hear the agenda, I'm going to go back to my office and find out from my staff it's 9 o'clock. So I wouldn't until I saw you guys. I did want to ask a question, Mr. Chairman.
Certainly.
As I was looking over this budget, and if I can have Mr. Beyer.
Come on up.
I didn't see your executive. Because what I was wondering in looking at the recommended approval and looking at the policy packages that you have, are we limited in any way in terms of your ability to do an effective job in terms of consumers? I really worry about that piece.
Mr. Chair, Senator Carter, I don't think so.
For the record?
Excuse me. For the record, Lee Beyer, Commissioner of the Oregon Public Utility Commission. I think the budget as presented will allow us to do the job that we need to do for consumers. The only thing that's missing, has been missing, is we had requested some authority from the, actually, authority from the legislature to deal with, on the telephone side, slamming and cramming, and it doesn't look like the legislature is going to grant us that authority.
That's my main question. Mr. Chairman, as you know, we had copious conversation. Mm-hmm. As a matter of fact, an even longer conversation than what I think any of us have anticipated on these kind of issues. I worry about that slamming and the cramming piece because, especially for the elderly, had I not been a member of this body to better understand what was going on my telephone, I have all kind of issues of that nature on my telephone bill every month. But also in light of the PGE situation and consumerism, I do have a problem along those lines. And I wish I could produce a magic wand and say to all the legislature, I don't know, I don't think you know what you're doing in not giving your money to deal with slamming and cramming and all that kind of stuff, because it's bilking a lot of people out of money every year. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. That's the only reason I'll vote for this budget, because I think it's stupid not to have that piece in. I'm going to make the record clear. It's stupid.
Mr. Chair, Senator Carter, we did help you with one, and we've helped a few other legislators, but I want you to know that we don't just help legislators. You know, we make it a point of trying to deal with any Oregonians concerned who call us. It's a little frustrating sometimes to not have the authority to go forth and do it, but sometimes just our ability to jawbone a little bit with them works pretty well with the incumbent telephone companies. It works a little less so with those who do business in the state but aren't housed here. But we will continue to do the best we can.
Question, certainly.
No, comment to the committee.
Oh, okay.
Quest Communications did help me. I had been charged $29 and some cent for almost a year, mm-hmm, for service I don't even have in my home.
Mm-hmm.
And how many other people out there are dealing with that same issue? And I think it's a shame on the part of the quote-unquote people's government, meaning the legislature, that we don't see the need to do something about this. And I'm a little disappointed. Enough of my diatribe for today.
Okay. Mr. Byer, that was going to be my question, and you expressed part of it already, and that is you do have some authority to deal with this issue. How far could you go to try to address, without the authority of the legislature, to address that problem?
Well, Mr. Chair, I guess the answer to that is as far as the companies are willing to cooperate. We have no authority currently to deal with that. The federal government has the authority on slamming. It's a little different on cramming. The two, cramming is an in-state issue predominantly, although with competition you have a mix of the incumbent providers in the state, and you also have a number from out of state that are doing business as competitive providers. So it's somewhat limited. Quite frankly, we browbeat them to the extent we can, and if we can embarrass them enough, they'll comply, and if we can't, we have no authority to make them comply under existing law. I want to be clear, though. My your consumer protection staff and telephone does a really good job. Since we asked them to start counting, slamming, and cramming calls since the start of the year, and we're over 300 since the start of this year. And that's only the people that have called and asked for help. The vast majority of them, because they tend to be pretty small charges, don't notice it for months sometimes. And, you know, an extra 25 cents here and there, if you're dealing with millions of customers, becomes real money real soon.
You and I have shared a good friend of mine that used to do the tracking on that. Ron Van Hoy told me, he said, you just can't believe what a nickel looks like when you multiply it by billions. And a transaction, and it's a big issue. Now, there is nothing to stop you as you guys accumulate information from releasing that to the press to put the pressure on that way, or are you guys very sensitive that way?
I've been known to do that in the past commissions. You use the tools you have.
Okay. Senator Morris.
Mr. Chairman, thank you. Rather than waiting, Mr. Byer, for complaints to come in, do we have audit authority to go in and actually do a statistical sampling of the bills and actually find out, you know, what is going on? Because that's what would drive change, is if instead of waiting for people to figure out their phone bill, actually go in and audit on a statistical basis. Do you have that authority?
Mr. Chair, Senator Morris, we have general auditing authority. I'm not exactly.
We don't know how to use some going
on. Yeah. We have some general auditing authority. It differs a little bit in this era of competition. When they were all incumbent telephone companies, we had more authority than we do now. Probably more important is we just don't have the resources to do it. I mean, you start looking with MCI, you know, if we had to send a team of auditors to New York, and the bills are huge. I'm not sure that's the best way. We're doing more auditing in the electrical way again. It's over the time, it's been different in how much we do that. We try to be selective because we don't have the capacity to do a general audit.
Okay.
Now, it may not be a full-blown audit in the sense that maybe we're not thinking the same thing, but to have a requirement that the providers submit a statistical sampling.
I see what you're saying. Mr. Chair, Senator Morse, I'm not sure in an audit you would be able to tell on a, if you look at it on a slamming case, let me use that, be similar in a cramming. If I went in and looked at your phone bill and say you were using Quest, you thought that was your long distance carrier, and XYZ carrier decided to slam and send in an order, and this is all done electronically, and they're huge orders at one time. There'd be no way for me to know when the bill showed up that you've been slammed, as opposed to just making a choice. The only way I can find that out is if you complain.
Cindy, we'll get back to you, and thank you. Any further questions for Ms. Jones?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, and going through the budget, there were no vacancy savings for the subcommittee to review. They had hired positions that were vacant, which were two, and they have been hired for. Moving down for the policy packages, the Public Utility Commission had, five packages, and we'll start with number one. It's Package Policy 101. It's a request to reclassify three positions. And as you can see, those positions are an Executive Specialist 1 position into an Executive Support Specialist 2 position, one Program Tech 2 position into a Consumer Protection Services into a Principal Executive Manager C position, and one Purchaser 1 position in Business Services into a Purchaser 2 position, one Support Services Supervisor position and Administrative Services Hearings into an Office Manager. The classifications were requested due to expanded duties and have been supported by DES. The agency, LFO recommends approval. The agency will finance this package through their savings in services and supplies, so they're not asking for any extended limitation.
Mm-hmm. Mr. Chairman.
Yes, Senator.
Your wishes in terms of if you want to approve one by one.
One by one. Cindy, I'll leave it up to you. I'm perfectly happy to do without objection relative to each package.
Okay.
Is that agreeable to everyone? Okay. All right. Policy Package 101. We have a recommendation for approval without objection.
Can I just make a
certainly.
Comment?
Questions
I don't
that.
Have any problem with the package, but when we talk about it being funded out of services and supplies so it doesn't cost us anything, that only means it doesn't cost us anything extra this biennium. If these people, I assume they're being reclassified up. I don't know the way of reclassifying anybody down. So there are higher salaries there, which will go on into the next biennium. So I just want to make the point that it may not be affecting us this time around, but as we're looking at salaries and things, these things do eventually catch up with us.
Do you want to come up? It might be good to clarify that. What would we be expecting in the next biennium?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Rick Willis with PUC staff. I don't have the exact number of what it will cost next biennium, but Senator Dukes is quite right that while we absorb it this coming biennium out of services and supplies, eventually should we ever get merit increases, those kinds of things again, yes, it will cost in the future. That's correct. We implement these with minimal financial impact, and that is we don't jump people 12 steps. We mm-hmm. do the next step that's appropriate for their new class.
Question, Cindy. What is your thought, are you thinking, in terms of recommended approval? Is it because of workload shift, bigger workload, anticipation in terms of where we get the money to pay for this, an increasing budget for the next term? Good question, Senator.
Mr. Chair, Senator Carter, these are looked at by DAS, and with expanded duties that they've had, my approval came from the fact that DAS has reviewed it. And with expanded duties, that's where I got my approval.
So they're actually, they have one question to.
Oh, certainly. Rick. Yes,
sir. Rick, when you look at these issues, what are the choices you had other than making them permanent positions?
Mr. Chair, Senator Carter, these folks are already permanent positions. This is just upgrading the classification. What we did was take a look at the scope of their duties, and these folks were performing higher-level duties, more complex duties. The scope of the job had expanded. We could do a couple things. We could look at adding more staff, keeping them at a lower level, adding other lower-level staff to pick up some of the duties. In this environment, we didn't think requesting more staff was a very wise idea. And so
I get your point.
Senator Dukes.
I was going to say, I don't have any problem with these because I look at what they're doing, and at least from the classification titles, and the PUC is one of those agencies that is evolving and needs to stay up with that evolution, and I think they're doing a good job of doing that. I'm the last person who will take it because DAS said it was a good thing. DAS does the most cursory review of most reclassifications than you can imagine. They don't look at whether or not anybody thinks we need the position, only whether the person is doing work that would qualify them for this increase. the truth may be, and I've seen it in some agencies, where if the director wants to accomplish a certain thing, he can give people more work, then reclassify them, and that can result in a different outcome that he was after. It wasn't really the reclassification he was after, it was the other outcome. So and DAS just sort of goes right along because they say, yeah, they're doing it. Not did we want them to be doing those other kinds of work. I actually saw one last biennium where we told the agency, we cut the position out of the agency. And I'll be darned it was back, and it was back through reclassification. And DAS just blindly let it go. I don't know if they have too much paperwork to be able to handle it all at DAS. It's something that we have tried and tried, and in another subcommittee that Representative Krieger and I are on, we're actually trying to make some dent in some of that. But the fact that DAS said it was okay doesn't impress me at all, because they don't give any kind of real review to these things. But this one, I think, meets their need, the agency's needs.
So move policy package 101.
Say again.
So move policy.
Oh, so, okay. Senator Carter's moves policy package 101 without objection.
Policy package 102 is the RSPF reclassification, where they're reclassifying one program tech 2 position into a principal executive manager C position. This reclassification is requested due to expanded duties and supported by DAS. And once again, the duties did increase.
Mm-hmm.
LFO recommends approval of this, and the agency will finance this package through savings and services and supplies.
Any questions about policy package 102? Representative Hanson?
No, we didn't.
Oh,
I thought you were just ready to move it.
You move?
Yeah.
Okay. Policy package 102 has been recommended to be approved. Is there any further discussion? If not, we'll move it on basis without objection. So moved. Policy package 103.
Policy package 103, it's in there, the Policy and Administrative Hearings Division. This is a change from the memo that I sent out on Friday. The agency has advised that they could actually, rather than go with a full-time position, could use limited duration. It would give more flexibility to the number of cases that are coming in. They wouldn't have to have a full-time position. They could hire a person on limited duration for this position. It's for the administrative law judge position, and they have had increased workload in that area, a 38% increase in orders from 2000 to 2001, so that is increasing workload. LFO recommends, again, approval of this package, then they'll finance it through savings and supplies and services and supplies.
Any questions about policy package 103?
So moved.
Senator Carter has moved policy package 103. Is there any further discussion? If not, without objection.
Sorry. Policy package 104, it's again for the policy and administrative hearings position. This is replacing a limited duration a law clerk position with a permanent law clerk position to provide the legal assistance to the administrative law judges. Currently, they hire temps in that position, and they can only be hired for a six-month period. This is, again, where they've had increased workload. There's 38% more orders coming through in that area and complaints. LFO recommends approval of this package. Again, it can be financed through their savings and services and supplies.
Any questions about policy package 104?
So moved.
So moved. Senator Carter has moved policy package 104. Any further discussion? If not, without objection. So moved. 107.
I put policy package 107 in there because it was at the public hearing. This was one of the policy packages in the budget, agency request budget, but it has been withdrawn due to the legislation.
Okay. Yeah, I thought we might want to comment on it.
I won't say nothing about that one. I'm through with that one. But I just wanted to say to Rick and to me that I'm hoping that the downturn in the economy will have lifted itself to a great degree next session, and just want you to know that if I'm on this committee, we're going to have to really talk about these in your budget, because I'm sure that you are overworked and you need them. But if the economic conditions don't change, you might be in a position where you have to look at some other means.
Okay.
Recommended appropriation bill amendment to approve the budget bill in the amount of $156,220,483 and a 123.50 FTE by approving the following amendments to Senate Bill 5539. Section 1, other funds, line 10, delete $9,176,109 and insert $9,031,473. Line 2, delete $9,974,217 and insert $9,627,550. Line 13, delete $15,890,342 and insert $15,295,214. In Section 2, federal funds, delete line 14. Section 2, federal funds, line 14, delete $337,108 and insert
$346,174. Okay. Motion to approve the Public Utility Commission as modified.
Mr. Chairman.
Do you want to go ahead and do that at this point on that unit, right?
Correct.
Okay. Senator Carter.
Chairman, I move that we approve the budget of the Public Utility Commission as modified above in Senate Bill 5539.
Okay. Senator Carter has moved amendments to Senate Bill 5539. Is there any further discussion or questions? Okay, without objection.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, on page 11 of the governor's balanced budget binder, there are the performance measures. I didn't write them out, but they are in the binder, and we just need a motion to approve the performance measures that's submitted.
Mr. Chair, mm-hmm. We approve PUC's performance measures as submitted.
Senator Dukes has moved we approve the performance measures as submitted to the committee. Any further questions or comments to the motion? Without objection. Everyone is too quiet. You guys are making me nervous. Yeah, but Gary, be quiet. Let's let it go ahead, right?
The ending balance in the 2003-05 governor's balance budget was $30,358,936, or 4.6 months worth of ending balance. When the budget reductions recommended by LFO were taken into consideration, the ending balance at that point would be $31,436,301, or 4.7 months of expenditures. The lowest ending balance during the 2001-03 biennium was $21,268,234, or 3.2 months worth of expenditures. So LFO recommends leaving the ending balance as is.
Senator Dukes?
Mr. Chair, does LFO think is reasonable? I mean, how many months worth of ending balance should they have given their cash flow and all of that?
Mr. Chair, Senator Dukes, LFO, along with DAS, they come to an agreement anywhere from between 3 to 6 months is correct ending balance, not to go over that.
Senator Morris?
Chairman, what would be a low balance, assuming that they have variable receipts of cash? What would be a low balance through a 12-month cycle?
Mr. Chair, Senator Morris, a low balance would be the $21,268,234. That was the lowest balance that they carried during the biennium of 2001-03. That's hitting at the 3.2 months, which anywhere from 3 to 6 months is what is the preferred balance.
That was the lowest monthly balance.
Correct.
Still looks like a huge reserve. Mr. Chairman, if the expenditure limitation is set, what would be the precipitating factor that would cause to go into that?
reserve.
Mr. Chair, Senator Morris, we may have to ask Mr. Willis about that. What would cause it to go under the amount?
Because that was going to be my question. Is there a certain expectation of anything that might tap into that?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Rick Willis again. This is an agency-wide total. So there are operating funds, there are federal funds, there's pass-through funds, there's contract funds. There's a variety of different funds involved in this. And for our operating funds, if you recall, we collect once a year. And that's why occasionally it looks so out of whack. We don't have monthly income. April 1st, we collect it all and then drain it next year through March 31st and then collect again. So, yes, there are occasions when our ending balance looks high, disproportionately high, but that's because we collect just once a year. I agree with Ms. Jones that 3 to 6 months is appropriate. We're at our lowest point at 3.2. We think that's a comfortable range.
Senator Dukes?
I'm going to assume that either the courts or the federal government could do something that would bring you back to the emergency board to dip into those reserves.
Mr. Chair, Senator Dukes, that's right. We have several areas where that could happen. Our Residential Service Protection Fund, for example, comes under a lot of federal scrutiny, and they oftentimes change the rules on us and add unfunded mandates, if you will, to the states to do additional things. And, yes, that's a case where we may have to come back to the E-Board and say, we've just had a federal law passed. We have additional duties. And it's actually not so much duties in that we need positions, but authority to spend more money for some additional service that they require us to do.
They're engaged in an activity that has a lot of outside influence.
Mm-hmm. Any further question on the ending balance? Would you mind just staying right there?
No problem, Mr. Chair.
Mr. Chair, we just need an approval of the ending
balance. Oh, yes.
Mr. Chair, I'll move approval of the ending balance of
$30,358,936. Did I pick the right number? No. Yes, that's right. Graham's first one. One right. How about $31,436,301? Is that work better? Okay. Sorry about that.
We're talking about doing all in here.
Million short.
You ain't hear me in there? It's only money.
Now we need to know, what are they going to do with that money?
Put it in the general fund. If we could.
Trust me, that's been looked at. Yeah. So are there any questions about the motion to approve the ending balance? I'm not going to restate the number. We know it's what it's a $31 million number. Okay, without objection. So moved.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, in your handout, there's also a proposed budget note that I've prepared. This is going to be contingent upon the co-chair's approval. By the time I got it Friday night, they weren't in to give the approval, so they were going to look at it today. And the budget note.
That's my fault, by the way.
The budget notes read, the commission is encouraged to continue conducting financial audits of regulated utilities and following completion of each audit set out the results in a detailed public report.
Rick, are you guys okay with that? That was
Mr. Chair, we are.
Mr. Chairman, they need to be okay with this, with Enron and PGE looking like it's looking. I'm sure they are. They need some direction.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, we do financial audits as is normally in connection with a rate increase request. So we do audits as is, and we will continue to do that. So we're fine with a footnote.
Okay. And the public report would be something that is not a problem. I mean, I think this is a case where everyone needs to be fully informed of what's happening out there. There's so many changes in the area that you folks regulate that's impacting us so greatly. I think it's a...
Mr. Chair, that's correct, and we do that now. We make them public. We put it on our website.
Mm-hmm.
As long as it's not proprietary information, yes, right. We do make that public,
okay.
And it's part of the case.
So, Representative Smith?
Thank you, Chair George. What's entailed in a financial audit?
Mr. Chair, Representative Smith, a number of things. When a company comes in and ask for a rate increase, they start a rate case. Our group of auditors will go into the company and review their books, financial books, and look at their expenditures, their revenues, those sorts of things. A normal financial audit as part of the rate making process.
In the course of the audit, is there ever management notes relating to expense items as far as being questionable or excessive?
Mr. Chair, Representative Smith, if auditors find something that is clearly that they believe is clearly inappropriate, they would note that in the audit.
Give me an example. What would be an inappropriate?
Mr. Chair, Representative Smith, don't want to give you an example of, for example, a case that's under review right now, but let's say there was a water company out in Central Oregon, and the owner of that water company bought himself a new yacht and claimed that yacht as part of business expense because he occasionally took out some of his water company customers for weekend jaunts. I think our auditors would look askance at that and say, we don't think that's quite appropriate.
What happens when there's a conflict between IRS code and utility commission's perspective? IRS code says you can buy a yacht.
Mr. Chair, Representative Smith, our auditors don't go by IRS code. The IRS has its own set of rules and codes. How a company sets up its taxes is different than what we look at when looking at a rate case and determining rates.
Follow up?
I guess what I'm trying to get at is what happens if from a legal perspective, the company is well within its rights to make a purchase or an acquisition or sell an asset, but based upon the commission's perspective of the good of the people, there's a conflict. Take the book, the yacht example, probably very perfectly legal,
sure.
And in the minds probably of the upper management, justifiable. How do you balance those two?
Mr. Chair, Representative Smith, again, what a person or a company can write off on their taxes is different than what may or may not be allowed in rates for the customers. There are rates, in determining rates, you look at what the customers should pay for the operation of that company and what the stake, what the shareholders should pay. Those are two different things. And it's not based on what the IRS allows as taxable or untaxable.
Well, let me ask one last question.
Certainly.
How do you iron out a difference between what is a legal purchase versus what perhaps is an unethical purchase?
Mr. Chair.
Maybe that's the question I'm trying to get at.
Commissioner Barr wants to.
Let me take a shot at Mr. Chair, Representative Smith, and I think I understand where you're trying to go. There is a difference between the way we audit from what you would get under standard CPA under accounting standards. the standard accounting standards are trying to determine whether the financial reports that are presented to the shareholders and stock buyers usually are accurate according to standards. Certainly we're interested in that, but that's not why we audit. We have our view companies' purchases is what we call, refer to in the utility trade, as below the line and above the line activities. And the demarcation there is it necessary for carrying out the business of delivering that utility services to the customer. We don't question necessarily what the management of a utility decides it needs to spend. What we question is how much of that expenditure are going to be allowed to be recovered through the rate base. So what we're looking at, and probably a more pragmatic example, is advertising. If a telephone company wants to do a lot of advertising to build community image, certainly some of that advertising is necessary to convey to the public what they're buying in the normal course of business, and some may not. If they want to do a lot of building of corporate image and blue sky, that's fine for them to make that expenditure. But that comes out of the shareholders' pockets, not out of rates. So that's what, when we're doing an audit, we're usually going in, our staff is going in ahead of, or following on a request for rate increase. We're looking at the reports. If they say they have to spend, $50 million on line improvements for electricity, we'll go in and make sure that they're spending that and how they're going to do it. And then the staff will present that in a report that becomes part of the commission's consideration in how much of a rate increase they feel is justified or not. So the answer, direct answer to your question, Representative, of who makes that decision is the commission makes that decision, and that decision stands unless the court decides differently.
That's okay. Go ahead.
One last question. Tell me the process involved if there's a disagreement between the utility and the PUC, between below the line and above the line. It's right there, maybe an inch above that line from
sure,
your perspective, but
sure,
there's it's an inch below.
That, as with the utility, the audit report will find its way into a formal part of the staff's testimony in the rate case, along with the utilities filing and any additional briefs or testimony they would file. Normally, that would be there. They would counter that if they felt that was necessary in their testimony. So it would find its way into the record as formal testimony or briefings papers.
And, Mr. Chair, Representative Smith, if I could add that in our cases, we have a number of interveners. The Citizens Utility Board, the Northwest Industrial customers, and these folks, along with our staff, look at the utilities records in their books and the information that they supply in support of their request for a rate increase. So there are a number of people looking at it. All of that information gets put on the record. An administrative law judge lays that all out, and then as Commissioner Beyer explained, that ultimately it goes to the commissioners, they weigh all those factors and make a decision. Does that help?
Okay, sir, I'll need a motion on the budget note, financial audit.
Mr. Chair?
Were you moving the motion? Or
did I did, but that's okay.
Representative Smith has moved that we approve the budget note dealing with financial audits. Is there any further discussion? If not, without objection, so moved. Senator Carter has agreed to be the carrier of the budget, and despite what that looked like, that was not a prize for leaving the room.
I need a house sign.
Oh, a house sign. Okay, so we're...
I need to carry this.
Okay, all right. Is
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, then you have tomorrow off because we have PUC scheduled for 2 days. So.
Without any further things to come before the committee, if not, we will be adjourned. Yeah, we need to.